Welcome to today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available at recordinglibrary.org and on the telephone reader by calling 432-617-5555.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Thursday, January 16th. Forum shows agreement on impeachment by Ruth Campbell. President Trump's impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate was one of the topics broached in Wednesday's luncheon review of 11th District congressional candidates by the Ector County Republican Women at the Odessa Country Club. Brandon Batch, who recently moved back to Midland, said people recognize that the impeachment is a sham. "We have so many problems here at home, and we're trying to solve so many problems so far from our shores," Batch said. He said infrastructure, health care, and other issues need to be addressed. Robert Tucker of Comanche told the packed House that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat, California, is trying to control the Senate and the whole government. He said voters should put someone in office who will look out for the interests of their own district. Other participants were August Pfluger of San Angelo, Jamie Berryhill of Odessa, Wesley Verdell of Brady, J. Ross Lacey of Midland, Ned Luscombe of Gardendale, Casey Gray of Odessa, and J.D. Faircloth of Midland, who are vying for the seat left open by the retirement of 11th Congressional District Congressman Mike Conaway, and gave their views on a variety of topics at the forum. CBS 7 News co-anchor Jay Hendricks, the moderator, had asked about impeachment and how it makes the country look on the world stage. Hendricks established by a show of hands that they all believe in the Second Amendment, the right to carry guns, support the border wall, term limits, are all pro-life, advocate for immigration reform, support President Trump, are against red flag laws, and support limited government and states' rights. Pfluger is an Air Force veteran who spent 2 decades serving this country. "What we can all agree on is there is a lack of due process," he said. He said the impeachment process has been conducted behind closed doors, and he has worked with President Trump and seen how much he cares about this country. Berryhill said Trump is leading the country in the right direction, and we must stand with him. Luscombe said this is a war between the deep state and Trump. "It started with President Woodrow Wilson and President Franklin D. Roosevelt," continued it. "Now we've got Trump, who was elected, and he and the bureaucracies are fighting with each other," Luscombe said. The candidates agreed that more mental health facilities are needed, and one said overprescription of drugs is to blame. Faircloth said most major shooting cases carried in the media involve anger or mental illness that people observed but didn't report. "I think there has to be some sharing between states and the federal government. If necessary, give them some medical treatment such that they can correct their situation. I think that's the important thing, is to have an information system where these people that demonstrate weakness or mental issues, that they're put on the radar," Faircloth said. Candidates also discussed fiscal responsibility, putting God and the Bible back into schools and into society, and returning to the country's founding principles. The Republican primary is March 3rd, and the general election is November 3rd. Quick hits. MLK Showcase. The Black Cultural Council of Odessa has scheduled the second MLK Showcase basketball tournament at 7 p.m. Friday, and at 1 p.m. Saturday at Odessa High School Gym, 1301 Dotsey Avenue. Admission for the basketball tournament is $5 per adult, $3 per child, and children under 5 get in for free. For more information, call 853-1344 or 212-6700. On the net, odessabcc.org. Monster Truck Wars will take place at 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. Saturday at the Midland County Horseshoe Main Arena, 2514 Arena Trail. Gates open at 11 a.m. Go online for tickets. On the net, MidlandHorseshoe.com. Valentine's events. West Texas Talent Entertainment has scheduled a Valentine's Day dinner, music, and a show at 7 p.m., February 14th through the 15th at Dee's Bistro and Grill, 622 North Lee Avenue. Cost is $84.99 per couple, includes dinner and show. Gratuity and alcohol is extra. Dinner music can be requested to be sung at your table or to your date. The 2020 theme is music from the movies. Music provided by Tasha Bone, Sonia Cortez, Kaylee Cochran, Raina Ray, and Priscilla Hernandez. Then at 8:30 p.m., comedy sketch will be presented from Shall We? Or This Is Not How It Happened in Sleepless in Seattle. All Brenda wants to do is meet the man of her dreams at the Empire State Building on Valentine's Day. But nothing ever goes right for Brenda. Starring Hareem Flores, Kelsey Cowan, Mino Cortez, Daniel R. Ryan III, Lori Norris, Sonia Cortez, and Karen Griffin. For more information, call 978-7405. Call for entries. Odessa Arts and the City of Odessa are looking for artists from Odessa and Ector County for the 2021 Community Art Gallery at City Hall. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Thursday. Wayne D. Gilliam, Sr., Curly, age 92, left this world and went to his heavenly home on Monday, January 13th, in Odessa. He was born on July 26, 1927, in Comanche County to Wayne and Alice Barrick Gilliam. He is survived by his wife, Mary Lois Gilliam of Comanche, children, daughter Ann Gilliam, self, and husband Ronnie of Odessa, and son Wayne D. Gilliam, Jr., Butch, and wife Carrie of Odessa. 9 grandchildren, 20 great-grandchildren, 2 great-great-grandchildren, and sister Olita Weaver of College Station. He also had many cherished nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by 2 daughters, Laura Lee Gilliam and June Gilliam Roberson, and parents Wayne and Alice Gilliam. Family will receive friends at Comanche Funeral Home on Thursday from 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. Lunch for the family will be at 11:30 a.m. on Friday, January 17th, at Taylor's Chapel Church in Comanche County. Funeral service will be at 2 p.m. on Friday, January 17th, at Comanche Funeral Home Chapel, with Reverend Bobby Stuteville and Dr. Donnie Alvenshine officiating. Interment will be in Downing Cemetery in Comanche County. Condolences may be offered online at www.comanchefh.com. Deborah Gail Dupuis Rinker, age 66, of Odessa, passed away on Thursday, January 9th. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel, with Pastor Karen Carlson officiating. She was born December 19, 1953, in Odessa to Otto Chick Dupuis and Anne Marie Dupuis. Debbie is survived by her beloved husband and friend, Rick Rinker, her son Nicholas Rinker and his wife Suzanne of Phoenix, Arizona, her daughter Katie Ann Rinker of Odessa, and her fiancé Jake Boren of Andrews. 2 grandchildren, sister Mary Lee Hughes of Quincy, Indiana, her brother-in-law Richard Dick Allison, and nephew of Odessa, as well as a host of extended family and dear friends. She is preceded in death by her parents and sister Mary Kay Allison and nephew Richard Todd Allison. Arrangements are under the direction of Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To sign the guest book, please visit www.sunsetodessa.com. Stanley Wayne Cruz, 77, of Coleman, died Wednesday, January 15th, in Coleman. Graveside service is scheduled for 1 p.m. January 17th at Coleman City Cemetery Pavilion. Burial will follow at the Coleman City Cemetery. Dr. Chaz Shira is officiating. Arrangements are by Stevens Funeral Home of Coleman. Juan Daniel Lujan Aranda, 48, of Odessa, died Tuesday, January 14th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. January 17th at Joseph's Catholic Church. Burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section. Deacon Alex Sosa is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Maria Luisa Garcia, 75, of Odessa, died Monday, January 13th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Friday, January 17th at St. Anthony Catholic Church. Interment will follow at the Rose Hill Garden section of the Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Edward Chacon Lujan, 53, died Tuesday, January 14th in Lubbock. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Deborah Lee Mossbarger, 56, of Odessa, died Friday, January 10th in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 11 a.m. Friday, January 17th at St. Barnabas Episcopal Church. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Willie Bogus Teeler, 58, of Brownfield, died Sunday, January 12th in Lubbock. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. January 18th at El Shaddai Missionary Baptist. Burial will follow at Mount Zion in Brownfield. Reverend Eugene Gentry is officiating. Arrangements are by Brownfield Funeral Home of Brownfield. Local news roundup. Police looking for carjacking suspects. The Odessa Police Department is asking the public to help identify suspects reportedly involved in a carjacking at Kent Quick Convenience Store at 601 North County Road West in Odessa on December 30th at 8 p.m. OPD stated in a news release that two Hispanic men approached a man while he was walking back to his vehicle, a maroon Lincoln MKZ. One of the suspects reportedly asked the owner of the vehicle a question, while the second suspect pointed a gun at the car owner and demanded his keys. The two suspects reportedly stole the Lincoln MKZ and fled the scene. Anyone with information about the carjacking should contact Detective S. Chavez at 432-335-4926. Police investigate car-pedestrian collision. The OPD reported a 15-year-old was struck in a collision on Highway 191. The Odessa Police Department Traffic Unit investigated a car-pedestrian collision that left a 15-year-old girl injured on January 14th. The collision took place on Highway 191 near East Loop 338. The teen was transported to a local hospital with life-threatening injuries. Drained Hydrocell. To your good health for Thursday. Dear Dr. Roach, 3 weeks ago I had to have removal of fluid that had collected around my testicles. Nearly half a liter was removed. 5 days later, fluid started to build up again, and now it has filled back up. I have been checked for cancer and infection and have neither. What is happening? What can be done now? Dr. Roach writes, it sounds like you have a large hydrocell, a collection of fluid around the testicle, surrounding the testes and spermatic cord. Normally these are small, but in some men they can become very large, holding up to several liters, and I have never seen one that's even as large as you are describing. These are treated by urologists. I am not sure what your urologist did to drain the fluid. A simple drainage procedure is often complicated by recurrence of the fluid, and perhaps that is what happened. The standard surgical approach is to surgically remove the entire sac of the hydrocell. An evaluation for testicular cancer is absolutely indicated. Ultrasound is usually the appropriate test. Infection in this area is uncommon, potentially very dangerous, and not subtle. USPS stamp to feature Big Bend. The limestone cliffs of Santa Elena Canyon in Big Bend National Park will soon adorn priority mail postage stamps across the country. Designed by art director Greg Breeding with original art by Dan Cosgrove, the stamp depicts the Rio Grande flowing through the 1,500 feet high canyon, one of the park's most visited destinations. The stamp, to be released January 18th, is part of a focus in 2020 on stamps that celebrate the people, events, and cultural milestones unique to the history of the United States, according to a release from the U.S. Postal Service. It costs $7.75. The USPS annually receives about 30,000 suggestions for stamp ideas. The Citizens Stamp Advisory Committee, made up of experts in fields such as history, science, and art, review the suggestions and pare down a list for the Postmaster General. State briefs from Wire Reports. Man sentenced to prison for dumping waste. A 52-year-old Midland man chose prison time over probation after pleading guilty Monday to a felony charge of intentional or knowing unauthorized discharge, according to a press release from the Midland County District Attorney's Office. Jose Mario Rivas Gomez had been offered probation to remedy the harm done to the property of the I-20 Wildlife Preserve. He was sentenced to 4 years in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. Authorities received an environmental complaint on January 3, 2019, about a trailer park pumping sewage onto the preserve's property. An investigation revealed that the trailer park was disposing of human waste in sewage pits, and a large pile of waste was found at the park. The owner was unaware there was a residential trailer park on his property. He said Rivas Gomez had lived on his property for years, but was not allowed to bring in additional trailers. Rivas Gomez lived at a separate trailer park and was using the property to collect money from tenants, which he was not authorized to do. The trailer park's sewage pit was found to be located uphill from the wildlife preserve's lake, and land near the pit sloped down steeply, which allowed the sewage to drain into the wildlife preserve. A total of 1,264 pounds of solid waste was found at the trailer park. Lubbock. Two killed in shooting at nightclub, suspect sought. Police in Texas say they are searching for a suspect after two men were fatally shot during a fight inside a Lubbock nightclub early New Year's Day. Police say the two killed were 17-year-old Garante Shepherd and 24-year-old Dedrick Traylor. Police say officers responding to Level Nightclub just before 2 a.m. Wednesday found a wounded Shepherd in the street in front of the nightclub and a wounded Traylor inside. Both were taken to a hospital where they died. Police say Traylor and the suspect had a physical altercation inside the club when the suspect pulled a firearm and shot him. Police say Shepherd was running from the scene when he was shot. No one else was injured. Police are asking anyone with information about the shooting to contact them. Houston. Woman ringing in New Year killed by stray bullet. Authorities say a woman ringing in the New Year was fatally shot by a stray bullet outside her Houston home. The Harris County Sheriff's Office said 61-year-old Philippa Ashford died after being shot at 12:01 a.m. Wednesday. The Sheriff's Department said it appears she may have been struck by celebratory gunfire from outside her immediate neighborhood. The woman's family and their neighbors were discharging fireworks in their cul-de-sac when she called out that she had been shot, according to the department. She was pronounced dead at the scene. We have no indication that any family member or anybody in the cul-de-sac was discharging a firearm, and we've walked the streets and canvassed up and down to see if we can find any shell casings in the neighborhood and are not finding anything, Sergeant Ben Beal, a spokesman for the Harris County Sheriff's Office, told the Houston Chronicle. The Menninger Clinic, a Houston facility that treats mental illness, said in a statement that Ashford was a nurse manager there, serving as a leader and mentor to their nursing and clinical team. Her body has been sent for an autopsy, and the Sheriff's Department is asking anyone with information regarding her death to call it. The Chronicle reports that Houston police and Harris County deputies issued public alerts on New Year's Eve, warning the public not to discharge their weapons while celebrating. The Menninger Clinic said it will hold a memorial service for Ashford and will provide grief counseling to those impacted by her death. Temple. Man not armed when killed by police officer. A report that police in Temple filed with the state's attorney general says a man who was fatally shot last month by an officer did not have a weapon. Police have released little information since the December 2nd shooting in Temple, about 70 miles northeast of Austin. Police have said Officer Carmen de Cruz fatally shot 28-year-old Michael Dean, but haven't said what led de Cruz to open fire. According to the Temple Daily Telegram, the report was filed Monday with the Texas Attorney General's Office, which compiles information on officer-involved shootings across the state. The report gives basic information like the location of the incident, but does not provide a narrative. It was filled out by a Temple police investigator. The report does say the shooting happened during a traffic stop. Temple police spokesman Cody Weems said in a statement Tuesday that police are required to file the report with the Attorney General's office within 30 days of an incident. He said that because police currently have only limited information from sources that do not have first-hand knowledge of the facts, the form might be revised later. De Cruz was placed on paid administrative leave after the shooting. History of put-downs causes broken trust between in-laws. Dear Abby for Friday. Dear Abby, I have been happily married to my darling husband for 20 years. The problem is his sister. When we first met, she asked my husband if I was for real, because I'm very outgoing and affectionate. In the early years, and until about 6 years ago, she would berate me with abusive criticism. In most instances, her comments were inaccurate. If I tried to overlook her actions and have a good relationship, she would soon find something else to criticize. I am normally an it's history kind of person when it comes to confrontations and forget them quickly. Thankfully, her abuse has finally stopped, but I'm now having trust issues because every time in the past, when I let my guard down to mend the relationship, she'd lash out and put me down again. Any advice would be greatly appreciated. Wary in Texas. Dear Wary, one would think that during the time your sister-in-law was sniping at you, your darling husband would have stepped in and told his sister to put her knives away. After suffering through 14 years of her emotional battery, it's no wonder you have trust issues where she is concerned. Intelligent person that you are, it's likely you always will have them, so stop blaming yourself for it. Continue being the outgoing and affectionate person you have always been, and keep your guard up, because that's what healthy people have to do when dealing with someone like her. Dear Abby, I love my wonderful neighbors of 28 years. They are 10 years younger than my parents. They have been like a second set of parents to me. My concern is for their health. They are in their 60s and 70s, but neither one goes to the doctor. The wife went 20-plus years ago and decided never to return after they prescribed diabetes and blood pressure medication for her. More recently, she can no longer leave the house because she has injured her arthritic knee so badly. She refuses to get it checked and claims it will heal. She diagnosed herself via Dr. Google. Her intelligent adult daughter is aware of all of this. I know this is a choice people make, But at this point, I'm sure it's just anxiety that is keeping her from getting the medical help she needs. She's missing her garden, her grandchildren, and grocery shopping. So I'm sure she doesn't want to spend the rest of her life like this. Her husband has no influence either and is picking up what she can no longer do. I've tried encouraging her to seek advice, but haven't pushed her so hard as to push her away. What should I do? Scared for them in Massachusetts. Dear Scared, if anyone could do anything, it would have to be the woman's husband and her daughter. I assume you have pointed out to your neighbor that with medical help she could heal more quickly, and also that there is something called preventive medicine that can help people avoid becoming seriously ill. Because you have talked until you are blue in the face and still haven't been able to get through, my advice is to love her while you have her. Volunteer opportunities. Basin Dream Center for Orphans is forming a public relations committee. Volunteers are needed to connect with area shelters, soup kitchens, and food banks for potential residents in its program. The committee would staff booths at area events to hand out information and visit churches in Midland and Odessa to answer questions about the center. Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale needs volunteers to assist with its annual fundraiser. Volunteers will usher and help with food service. You will also be able to enjoy a concert by the nationally touring trio, Take Three. The event is 7:30 p.m. January 16th at Midland Community Theater. United Way has a volunteer opportunity for those who can't get out of the office during the day. Velo is a project designed to support children's reading skills and to increase volunteer opportunities for professionals. Velo volunteers can work from any device anywhere. It's an interactive one-on-one online tutoring program that connects local classrooms to volunteers in a safe online environment. With the support of a virtual volunteer, students can read and complete activities to build reading skills and strengthen comprehensive literacy. The West Texas Recording Library needs volunteers to read daily newspapers and other written media. Dedicated to improving the lives of people who cannot access the printed word, the Recording Library of West Texas offers audio versions of different forms of media to the visually impaired. From audio version books and audio version magazines to audio version newspapers and newsletters, the library helps people in the community stay connected and better their lives. Volunteers must be over the age of 16 and able to dedicate a minimum of 2 hours a week on their own schedule. Legacy Scholar and SIP hours are available. The mission and goal of Faith Kitchen Ministries is to help fight hunger by supplying emergency food assistance to those in need. On every third Friday in August, the Friday before the third Saturday, volunteers are needed to unload food deliveries in the food pantry, stock shelves, and set up the food pantry for distributions. On every third Saturday, volunteers assist guests with shopping in the food pantry and, if needed, help clients to their vehicles. Daily prayer can increase satisfaction and self-worth. Commentary by John Stark, special to the Washington Post. Many Americans set out to establish their identity by following desire and ambition. Individual freedom, self-determination, and self-expression are our highest good. This is the cultural air we breathe. The problem is it often doesn't work out the way we had hoped. Traditions, religions, received wisdom, and social ties, like family and community, have historically been the meaning-building things of life, as author Judith Shulevitz puts it. But these aren't how we find meaning anymore. We are pressured to find meaning and significance in our accomplishments and careers more than ever. It's not working more that's wearing us out. It's that we are expecting more out of our work. It's not meant to provide inner stability and meaning. Shulevitz cites studies in her book, The Sabbath World, Glimpses of a Different Order of Time. In 1991, the economist Juliet Shore advanced the now conventional thesis that global competition forced Americans to toil longer and rest less. She based this on rough estimates that people gave during interviews with U.S. census takers over three decades. Meanwhile, two sociologists, John Robinson and Jeffrey Godby, were asking people to fill out time diaries, noting exactly how much time they spent on each activity of the day right after they had done it. They concluded that Americans work less than they did in the 1960s. How do you reconcile what people said with what their time diaries showed? You acknowledge that Americans feel more pressed for time, whether they're working harder or not, Shulevitz writes. Writer Sophie Gilbert explains how millennials have experienced burnout from what she calls competitive individualism amplified by social media. They are more likely to be perfectionists and therefore more likely to be depressed, anxious, unhappy, and dissatisfied with themselves. She says modern adults have constructed flimsy charades of identities based on what they think other people will want. They want to prove that their lives are things to be admired and that their homes, vacations, children, closets all function as projections of their best selves, organized, attractive, authentic, unattainable. She defines competitive individualism as the performance of the self being more important than the reality. In other words, our sense of self is fragile. This is no way to form an identity and find meaning, but unless you are completely disconnected and siloed from any consumption of cultural goods, media, entertainment, public education, etc., this is how you've been formed to find your way in this world, whether consciously or subconsciously. I want to suggest a different path that's much older, prayer. Does that surprise you? I've discovered the practice of prayer unlocks resources to provide a deep experience of meaning and significance. It is the context where we find the durable identity to persevere each season of life. Recently, I spoke with Mark Pagan of the podcast Other Men Need Help about male friendship, and he asked me what experience of friendship I would want to take into the next life. I told him that as a pastor, it's hard to be vulnerable, and most of us feel an inordinate pressure to never show weakness. I experienced a long season of depression in 2015. I remember sitting in a dinner with a close friend, sharing my inability to shake it. I was half expecting him to distance himself and give me some well-meaning encouragement that would end our meeting. Instead, he leaned in and listened. He asked probing questions. He demonstrated love. It was one of those moments where it was safe to fall apart with another person. I could just be myself and be loved. And that's the experience I want to take into the next life. Christianity teaches it can be experienced in this one as well, and prayer is the regular context for it. While our modern world clamors to build an identity through performance, accomplishments, and becoming what we think other people will want, Christianity teaches us that we can receive a deep identity. The regular rhythm of prayer is being yourself and being loved by God. It's the otherworldly experience of being weak, but received into His transcendence. I encourage you to experience being received not for adapting to what others think you ought to be, but simply because God loves you. That's called grace. The presence of God is a safe place to fall apart and be needy. In a world of performance, it's a renewal. St. Augustine tells us that humans have infinite desires. We're actually made for infinite, transcendent things. When asked how to make sense of our ecological crisis, author Wendell Berry remarked that it shouldn't surprise us since humans have infinite desires and our Earth has limited resources. We have infinite desires, so it's no wonder we find ourselves with fragile and frustrated identities since we have been looking to fulfill these desires in finite, limited things like work, accomplishments, and being received by our peers. The practice of prayer is how humans with infinite desires meet God, who is infinite fullness. The new year can be a time to reorient how we seek God's fullness and joy. There is much to learn about prayer, but it's easy to get started. Begin by reading Psalms in the Bible and see how believers have prayed and what they've prayed for. Read a book on prayer. Find a community of faith and see how they pray and what they seek. Christians often come to prayer not knowing what to say, whether because of suffering, weariness, or feeling distant from God. That's okay. God, who is our help, invites us just to be present. He tells us not to expect to be received for many words, but because we are loved. John Stark is the lead pastor at Apostles Church Uptown in New York City. Bride's choice of groomsmen brings back painful memories. Dear Abby for Saturday. Dear Abby, I am a 37-year-old man who is getting married for the first time. My fiancé, Holly, and I went to middle school and high school together, but never really got to know each other until a few years ago. I love her more than words can describe, and I'm happy to be getting ready to spend my life with her. Growing up, I was socially awkward, partly due to having Asperger's, which made me a target for bullies. Holly and I are now choosing our wedding party. My sister will be one of her bridesmaids. Holly is an only child, so she doesn't have a brother who could be one of her groomsmen. She has expressed that she would like her cousin, Gerald, to be one of my groomsmen, so someone from her family is in our wedding party. The problem is, Gerald was my main tormentor from 8th grade, all through high school. At one point in 10th grade, his cruelty led to my attempting suicide. I carry the scar from the attempt on my right wrist. I understand that people change and mature as they grow older, and I'm okay with Gerald attending the wedding. But the idea of having him standing next to me on the biggest day of my life, along with my best friend and two closest cousins, triggers too many awful memories. How can I plead this to Holly without hurting her feelings or looking shallow and petty? Nervous groom-to-be. Dear groom-to-be, shallow and petty? The scar on your wrist is visible, but clearly there are others equally painful that are not. I don't think it would come across as either shallow or petty if you explained to your fiancé, exactly as you have explained it to me, why you prefer Gerald not to be at the altar with you on the most important day of your life. This is something Holly should have been made aware of before the two of you set a wedding date. Do it now. Dear Abby, I have been an alcoholic since I was 21. I was married for 19 years, and my drinking was at its worst toward the end. I was selfish toward my wife and my daughter. Since then, I have learned many hard lessons that could have been avoided if only I had never drunk. I have apologized to my ex-wife for my actions. I was never violent, but I embarrassed her and my daughter with behavior that I'm ashamed of. After our divorce, I made a few more mistakes and finally sought help. I'm in a Christian-based rehab program and have chosen to follow this path for the rest of my life. Over the last 6 months, I have sent texts and a few letters to my daughter, hoping for an acknowledgement or some dialogue, to no avail. Since being at rehab, I've written her about my feelings and some small talk, always ending my letter telling her she's the love of my heart and I miss her. Is there anything else I can do? Hoping and praying in Nashville. Dear Hoping, yes, there is one more thing you can do. Because she may consider your words nothing but lip service, make an attempt to visit her so she can see the change in you. Accept that damage has been done and you cannot alter the past. Continue living your life on the path you have chosen and pray that, with time, your daughter will recognize that you have turned your life around and let you back into hers. Man's family treats him as a second-class citizen. Dear Abby for Tuesday. Dear Abby, I have been married to a wonderful man for 33 years. He doesn't drink or smoke and has never used pot or drugs. We have the best time together, love each other, and enjoy our life together. The trouble is his family. He's the youngest, and they treat him like an outsider. Whenever we get together, his mother often tells him he was a surprise baby, and his siblings treat him like an interloper. I have been wanting to limit our contact with his family, and my husband, who has been loyal to them, even though they treat him this way, is finally coming around. I don't want to be rude, but his family will never change their ways. What's the most polite way of distancing ourselves without hurting anyone? Outsider's wife. Dear wife, the polite way is to tell the relatives you can't see them because you have a schedule conflict, a previous commitment, a trip planned, a sick pet, or think you may be coming down with something contagious and don't want to give it to them. The better way would be for you and your husband to tell them you don't like the way they treat him, and if it continues, they will see much less of both of you. Dear Abby, I have been at my current job just over a year, and I really enjoy it. My coworkers and I get along, and it's a great job for my skill set. When I was interviewing for the position, I made a point of saying that I'm not the type of person who will leave after a short while because it's a problem employers face where I live. Recently, however, I have been asked to help my father run his business. He's not a young man, and he genuinely needs the help I can provide. I am torn. Should I put my family first or keep my promise not to leave this job after such a short time? Torn in Colorado. Dear Torn, I think you already know what you must do. Talk to your boss, explain the situation, and apologize. Then give enough notice that a replacement can be found so you're not leaving your employer in the lurch. Dear Abby, my husband and I recently lost our beloved pet of 12 years, Bootsy. He was our first fur baby. His death was very sudden and we are devastated. We don't have children. It was as if he was our firstborn. What can we do to get through the death of our beloved dog child? Suffering in the South. Dear Suffering, I am sorry for your loss. An unfortunate aspect of being emotionally invested in a pet is the reality that they have much shorter lifespans than humans do. Start the healing process by reminding each other that you gave Bootsy the best life possible. Consider making a contribution in his name to an animal rescue organization. Then contact the veterinarian who cared for Bootsy about joining a grief support group to help you through this time of bereavement. Leftover GoFundMe money should help others in need. Dear Abby for Tuesday. Dear Abby, I'm responding to the October 25th letter from Maria in California regarding the leftover money in her late husband's GoFundMe account. If more than enough is contributed to help someone in need pay their medical expenses, that money is not intended to be income for the recipient's family. You rightly suggested considering her husband's wishes, but the contributor's intent was to help a needy person pay medical expenses. Any leftover funds should be donated to a nonprofit organization with similar goals, perhaps a free medical clinic for low-income patients, or an organization that provides free or reduced-cost housing for families who travel to medical centers for a loved one's treatment. Family members should not profit from generous donors who intended to help pay a needy individual's medical bills. Glenn in Pennsylvania. Dear Glenn, thank you for your comment. Other readers disagreed with my answer and said that Maria and her family should pay it forward. Read on. Dear Abby, regarding which family member is entitled to the leftover funds from Maria's terminally ill husband's GoFundMe account, I say none of them. People donated money to help defray the costs of treating the husband's illness. Now those have been paid. It is unseemly, a money grab, and unethical fraud to assume remaining funds can be used by either the widow or the daughter. The money wasn't given to them. The solution is to donate the remaining funds to the disease research, hospice, medical facility, or any other cause near and dear to the deceased's heart. That way there is no conflict of interest, no impropriety, and it's the right thing to do. Mo in San Diego. Dear Abby, Maria in California asked what to do with the leftover money raised on GoFundMe for her husband who has passed away. I would have suggested she go back to the GoFundMe site and find some other families in need and donate the money to them. Marion in Utah. Dear Abby, my fiancé and I have been together for 4 years. I love him very much, but there are times when he lectures me and I get tired of it. Then, about an hour later, maybe sooner, he will come and say, "I'm sorry." I'm getting frustrated because he's always sorry. There are times I just roll my eyes and wait. What can I do or say when he comes back to apologize when he always makes it my fault? Frustrated in South Carolina. Dear Frustrated, what is going on is a red flag, and you should recognize it as such. That your fiancé talks down to you and then says he's sorry but it was your fault isn't an apology. It's a lame excuse for his bad, verbally abusive behavior. Please carefully examine what is really going on in your relationship before it begins to affect your self-esteem, and possibly rethink this engagement. Patient never had flu shot. To your good health for Tuesday. Dear Dr. Roach, when I was quite young, my doctor told me to never get a flu shot because it could kill me. I do not remember the reason behind this statement. I'm in my 70s now and I'm very concerned about not getting the shot. I had yellow jaundice as a child and don't know if this has had anything to do with the doctor's statement. Dr. Roach writes, the major risk of getting the influenza vaccine is having an allergic reaction. The most severe of these allergic reactions, anaphylaxis, is indeed life-threatening. Nobody with a well-documented history of anaphylaxis to influenza vaccine, regardless of the presumed vaccine component, should get the influenza vaccine again. Jaundice from jaune, which is French for yellow, is caused by a failure of the liver to correctly metabolize bilirubin, a component of bile. Although many kinds of diseases may cause high bilirubin, which can be seen as a yellow discoloration of the eyes and mouth, a childhood bout of jaundice often indicates a viral hepatitis. I would recommend discussion with your current physician, and if you choose to get vaccinated, you should be monitored in a setting where you could be treated for an allergic reaction, although I think the likelihood is small. STEM Library Gets Organized with More Offerings by Ruth Campbell. Thanks to a donation of about 6,000 books and furniture items from a now-closed church day school in Austin, the University of Texas Permian Basin STEM Academy has a more fully fleshed-out library. Bonnie Villarreal, reading coach and dyslexia interventionist at the STEM Academy, said the library is her side project. The donation came from St. Paul Lutheran Day School from the St. Paul Lutheran Church in Austin. They were part of Concordia University. The school was closed down 2 years ago and the books were in storage, so they were donated to make room for other things. Villarreal said she worked with Margaret Peterson, executive director of the Lutheran Literacy Project, to obtain the materials. Villarreal has had help from students, faculty, and parents to put the library together in the middle school and high school areas. She added that the process started about a year ago. Her goal is to get students to enjoy reading. Some, but not all, of the students were volunteering for National Honor Society and Student Council hours. We started the library with basically nothing but donations about a year ago. With this gifting, we're going to be able to greatly expand our library. I just love books myself, and it's just really important that students of all ages have books they can hold in their hands and read and have some choice about books. We have a wide variety of fiction and nonfiction books. It's important that they have opportunities to choose something of interest, and it's so important that they have opportunities to read every day, because research shows that the students that read every day have higher scores on all types of tests. They're more prepared for college, career readiness, and better prepared to be parents, because it's important for parents to read to their children, Villarreal said. STEM Academy will have a library night from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. tonight, January 7th, where students can come and check out books. 16-year-old junior Kylie Mesa said reading is very important. I personally enjoy reading for knowledge. I think it's entertaining, but I find certain genres more entertaining than others, particularly science. And I do have a lot of math books, so I like to read those sometimes, Mesa said. Natalia Alexander, an 11-year-old sixth grader, was helping stamp books with the school name. Honestly, I think it's pretty cool because we didn't honestly have much of a library before this. It was just a few books, and it was for the littler kids. But now we have a very big variety of books now, and it's very nice, Alexander said. Eliza Oglesby, also an 11-year-old sixth grader, said it's amazing that the school now has all these books because it can broaden students' horizons. The reason I'm here is because I want to help with everything, and I think it's great that we now have a library, Oglesby said. Couple is target of ridicule for their healthy lifestyle. Dear Abby for Thursday. Dear Abby, we need advice about how to respond to friends and family who poke fun or show disdain because of our healthy lifestyle. We are in our 60s. We rarely eat out, and when we do, we avoid fast food. We cook most of our meals with an emphasis on vegetables, fruits, fish, and chicken. We exercise regularly and have occasional treats. We have no chronic illnesses and aren't on any medications. For some reason, our food choices rub people the wrong way. If we are asked why we are in good health, we answer, over the years, we've learned not to consume foods or beverages that make us feel bad. If we're invited out to eat and order the baked salmon with broccoli instead of the burger and fries, we hear, your diet is so boring. We usually laugh and shrug it off, but we don't think our diet is boring. We simply enjoy being healthy and know that food is medicine. Should we continue to keep our mouths shut? Healthy living. Dear Healthy, yep. Your friends and family react the way they do because seeing you eat the way you do makes them feel self-conscious about their own food choices. Continue laughing and shrugging to age 100. The others may not be as fortunate as you. Dear Abby, my girlfriend recently discovered that I am still talking to another girl I used to date. I'll call her Kyra. Kyra and I had agreed we would remain strictly friends, and the breakup was before I started dating my current girlfriend, Jan. Jan is devastated by this, and I can somewhat understand why. She got cheated on multiple times in her last relationship. Do you think I was crossing a boundary by wanting to maintain the friendship with Kyra? Or should I have dropped it when I started dating Jan? I'm asking you because everyone I talk to agrees with me, and everyone Jan talks to agrees with her. I assume it's because people agree with whoever is telling the story. You are unbiased, and your opinion would be greatly appreciated. Doing the right thing in Utah. Dear Doing, there's nothing wrong with remaining friends after a breakup. Jan is insecure because her last boyfriend cheated on her, and who can blame her? However, that is your problem, and you shouldn't make it yours. Your mistake was not telling Jan when you first started dating that you are still in touch with Kyra and that she's a platonic friend, nothing more. Jan does not have the right to control your friendships, and you shouldn't let it happen. Dear Abby, how do you cut off a person who talks constantly without a break? By the time there's a lull in her speech, I have forgotten what I wanted to add to the conversation. Word in Edgewise in Pennsylvania. Dear Word, I have encountered compulsive talkers like her. They are exhausting. Remember, she has to breathe sometime. The minute she starts to inhale, start talking. MSS Volunteer Opportunities. Every year, the Midland YMCA puts on a friendly, family-friendly dance so families can dress up, dance, and have fun. The Y is asking volunteers to decorate the gym, head its cupcake decorating and refreshment tables and craft area, and help with taking tickets and cleanup. It's a chance to get fancy in comfy shoes and have a great time supporting local families. The event is from 6:30 to 10 p.m. February 8th. The gym will be decorated from 1 to 4 p.m. Sharing Hands, a Respite Experience. Share needs volunteers to assist in the care of special needs youth and their siblings. Support its staff by engaging with children in activities, including games, movies, and crafts. Must pass a short background check. Dinner is provided. Events are held at Crossroads Fellowship in Odessa from 5 to 10 p.m. throughout the year. This volunteer opportunity is family-friendly. Unlock Ministries needs office volunteers to support the administrative team. This is an ideal opportunity for those who enjoy organization and office work. Unlock Ministries is a faith-based mentoring community for kids to help them discover their value and thrive. Unlock helps at-risk students through literacy camps, summer camps, school reading groups, and year-round mentoring groups. Hours vary. Volunteers must be at least 16. Serve at Kaleidoscope Ministries' biweekly Rise after-school program. Volunteers play outside, tutor, eat dinner, and facilitate a Bible study for pre-kindergarten to sixth-grade students. Volunteers are needed to assist classroom leaders with activities and structure. At Kaleidoscope, leaders work to share the gospel and work in Southeast Midland through mentoring, after-school programming, and community events. Volunteers must be at least 15. The West Texas Recording Library is in need of volunteers to read daily newspapers and other written media. Dedicated to improving the lives of people who cannot access the printed word, the Recording Library of West Texas offers audio versions of different forms of media to the visually impaired. From audiobooks and audio version magazines and newspapers and newsletters, we help our community stay connected and better their lives. Volunteers must be over the age of 16 and able to dedicate a minimum of 2 hours a week on your own schedule. Legacy Scholar and SIP hours are available. Ashes have waited 30 years to be scattered over Hawaii. Dear Abby for Friday, January 10th. Dear Abby, 30 years ago, a friend of my husband's roommate passed away of AIDS and was cremated. His family had ostracized him. I have no idea who they are or where they are. The roommate left and later died, also from AIDS. He left his friend's ashes in his old room in my husband's house in the San Francisco Bay Area with instructions to scatter them in Hawaii. The ashes have been sitting reverently in a cardboard box on a shelf in our several homes for all these 30 years. We are still together but getting old. There is no paperwork of any kind. All we know about the deceased is his name and the fact that he was a friend. Before I die, I would like to resolve this problem and arrange for the ashes to have a permanent resting place, preferably in Hawaii. I have a nephew who lives on the Big Island where the scattering should take place. How should I proceed in light of the no paperwork problem? Mike in California. Dear Mike, I applaud your caring heart and your determination to carry out this man's last wishes. I took your question to Joshua Slocum, Executive Director of the Funeral Consumers Alliance, and this is what he told me. There is no impediment to your taking the ashes and placing them where you wish, since there are no relatives who have an interest in them. If you plan to carry them on an airplane, be sure to have them in a scannable container. Nothing metal or such heavy earthenware that an X-ray scanner would be prevented from seeing inside. There is no requirement that you carry a death certificate or any other certificate with you. You do not need papers to walk around with an urn or to travel with one. As far as scattering goes, people scatter ashes all the time. Cremated remains are sterile calcium and no threat at all to the environment. While public lands usually discourage or prohibit by rule scattering of ashes, it is common practice that cannot be stopped. Use discretion and care. There is no such thing as ashes police. Dear Abby, I am older and on a fixed income. At times I still date, and I'm not sure how to handle this. After one or two dinners out or glasses of wine, etc., I feel my dates are waiting for me to treat them, and I can't afford it. I don't know how to explain that I don't have enough money to do that. I'm a very giving person, and I would love to make them dinner if I knew them better. One time I brought someone a huge amount of beautiful organic vegetables, but that wasn't enough. He was really upset. I didn't buy him wine on one of the dates. What to do? Really wish I could. Dear Really Wish, the person who was really upset that you didn't buy him wine on one of those dates should have been told that you were on a fixed income and it wasn't within your budget. You should also have told him you were reciprocating within your ability. If he needed a drink that badly, he could have paid for his own. You're lucky to be rid of him. In the future, tell the man you are seeing that after you know him better, you would love to treat him to some home-cooked meals, which might actually be nicer than what you can afford to buy him in a restaurant. He might appreciate both your candor and the food. If he doesn't, I think you'll be lucky to be rid of him, too. P.S. Have you considered paying the tab for a casual breakfast, lunch, or a coffee pastry date instead of dinner?
That's all for today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, a production of the Recording Library of West Texas. You can also hear this program anytime online at recordinglibrary.org or by calling the telephone reader at 432-617-5555.